We can do that.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday, May 21st meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And thank you, members. Senator Farioli had to be somewhere all of a sudden and will not be with us today. And if anyone is here on Senate Bill 832, we're not going to take that one up today because our paperwork is not quite ready. So we will. Do I want to carry that over?
You do, Madam Chair.
Okay, so I need to probably open a work session or just carry it over? Okay, so I'll carry Senate Bill 832 over. And then the other bills we will be taking up. So we are. Oh, great. Now we can actually start on these first three,
yep.
Right? Okay. Okay, so I'm going to start by opening a work session on Senate Bills 214, 215, and 217. And I'm going to ask Senators Roblin and Cruz to come forward. Aaron, do you want to say anything about these, or we'll just let our legislators maybe tell us what's happening with
Madam Chair, I would defer to the good members who are coming forward to talk us through each of the three bills that have come from the chair's committee, as they all have substantial amendments and they come out of a work group and a work process that they have been intimately involved in.
So we've 14. Opened hearings on all three of these bills. We're glad that both of you are here, the chair of the education committee and vice chair?
Member.
Great. So we are looking forward to hearing what you've been up to.
Thank you. And for the record, my name is Arnie Roblin, Senator, Senate District 5. And I'll start by just doing some general kinds of stuff, and then we'll go back and forth on any questions you might have. These three bills were interconnected, and that's why we sent them to you, because we hadn't finished up, for the most part, on the largest bill, which is 215. The 214 was around the governor's budget that we have in front of us today, and it had to do with some strategic investments, especially an initiative, especially the third preschool to third grade reading initiative and a few others. What we did in each of these cases, we put amendments that replaced the entire measure that had to do with establishing an age 3 through grade 3 reading initiative with the Oregon Department of Education to ensure that all students can read by the grade level. There are short statements, which hopefully we've gotten to you on each of these, and if you haven't, we'll make sure that we get them to you that identify what actually happens in these bills. It specifies the grant eligibility, the requirements, the grant application process, the criteria for determining the grant. It also specifies the requires school districts to have memorandum of understanding with one or more community-based organizations for the early reading program to qualify for extended learning grant unless grant is waived. All of these things were part of what the OEIB and the Department of Ed had worked through the interim in providing as initiatives for money to be spent this year. So those all came to the Budget Committee. These bills, the 215, will be 14, will be going to Ways and Means for the purpose of whether or not we choose to fund it. I mean, if we may or we may not, that's part of the Ways and Means process. What we did in this bill is just make sure that the criteria and the other things are appropriate for what we think they should be. That's the same, basically, with Senate Bill 217. It is another one. We just wanted to make sure that the language changes that we make in the one will carry over to the other. In the future, I think you will see a totally different way of doing all of these bills. In 217, the -2 amendments replace the – this is on Senate Bill 217 – replaces the original measure, requires the Oregon Education Investment Board, which will in the other bill be changed to another name. I'll talk about that because that's the bigger bill that we spent the work group on. And it recommends to the legislature about programs that make strategic investments for specific processes, purposes, including the Oregon Early Reading Program, the Guidance and Support for Postsecondary Aspirations Program, and the Connecting to the World of Work Program. So these are all programs that were begun before, and this is the enabling legislation to spend the money to the places it needs to go. But it identified OEIB as the person that one of the groups that organized it.
Madam Chair, for the record, Senator Jeff Cruz, if I could, Arnie, just to clarify,
These are existing programs. We just want to make sure the language is still there and in the possession of ways and means, but it still is going to be a funding decision in that committee.
Right.
But without these, they wouldn't have those tools to make the decisions on.
And so we worked with the governor's office. We worked with all the people to make sure that it was what they wanted, and that's where those are. The bigger bill, and the one that we really want to talk about the most, but we will answer any questions on the others, is Senate Bill 215-3 amendments. It's a fairly large bill, but so to make you feel better, it's 3 pages long, shorter than it was a couple
yes,
days
it
ago.
Was.
So
93 to 89 pages.
Exactly. We brought together a group of people at the beginning of this session. It was clearly understood by me, and I think by many of the members on our committee, that the OEIB, as it was functioning, had a difficult way to move forward.
As it was not functioning.
Okay. So people had different impressions of how it was working, where it was at. So we invited, or I invited, a group of people, and if you should have the one pager, and on the back, it has the... Did you get a copy?
Are they out here?
Yeah. Double sign.
And I'll ask you to look at that, because I think that will be the most informative. On the back of that page is the different representations who were there. And it was a fairly long list. And a number of them are sitting in the room right now. And so every week we got together for 2 to 3 hours to have a conversation about what was working, what wasn't working, and where we wanted to go. So the first conversation and the first thing that ended up saying was that we agreed that the board itself was not working. Number two, I think thing that we agreed to was that most of us believed that having the agency and working on getting coordination between all of the parts of the education endeavor was a really good goal. And one of our members, Ozzie Rose, brought a little history about since 1976, every few years we put together another commission, another group to solve the problem of coordinating the P20 system. And so I think it became clear and evident fairly early that we really should try to finish the work we've begun and not disband it now only to bring it back in 2 or 3 years. And so how could you fix and make the system work? So we first made the decision on the board. We then had a conversation with the governor's office, and because there are people who believe that having an agency without an advisory group is not necessarily best. So the way this bill is designed right now is that after it passes and goes into law, the governor has the option, and we have encouraged her to think about this, to do an executive order to make an advisory board. And our suggestion to her on that advisory board was that it should be made up of 2 members from the state board, 2 members from the HEC board, a member from the Early Child Care Board, and a member from the Youth Ed Board should all be members of it. We're looking at this as a coordinating agency, and if you don't have the people who are making decisions at the other level there advising you, it's easy to have multiple purposes conflicting with each other.
And Madam Chair, this advisory board would be advising the Chief Education Officer.
We then started looking at what are the issues that created some of the most angst with people. And I would say that clearly the whole idea of strategic investment, when you're taking it away from the base and putting it some other place, was one of the issues that came up a lot. The other thing that came up consistently was the one thing that had been really well done at OEIB was the emphasis on equity and figuring out how to make that a lens through which everything we do tries to make sure that all children are being given the new resources and the equipment that they need to move forward. And that came through clearly, so it's also listed in our bill. So what we have, once we did that, as we worked through figuring out what we would put in, what we would take out, we made the decision that we would put this little sidebar on the side that says we need to dig into this a little deeper and we need to have a bigger discussion. And so we have agreed with that group, and to open it up at some point if people would like to join, to continue a work group, not a organized one that you have to fund or whatever. Everybody's agreed they'll come to the table to have an ongoing conversation, to have legislation that would fill in some of the stuff that budgeting is an issue that all of the agencies have to do. How do we coordinate the budget and what can we do with that? How the other boards are organized and who's there? Other kinds of issues, Jeff?
Yeah, what we have before you now in 2015 is a transition step to what we are hoping will be a different structure that this work group will be able to bring back to the Legislative Assembly next session. And so, which is why some of the name changes, we're changing the name of OEIB agency will now become
the Office of the Chief Education.
Yeah, so there's some name changes, but still Nancy Golden is still the one doing what she's doing with a different advisory board, still have the same connections to all of the other structures that are in place, but it is our goal, and actually Senator Roblin, the work group he has put together is pretty comprehensive. And I think is working really well together. So basically what we're doing here is saying what we have now is going away. This is our transition structure to take us to the 2016 session and I do believe we'll be able to bring back to the Legislative Assembly a different structure for the way the administrative structure for the education system looks like and operates. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's our goal down the road. What this bill actually does is it extends the sunset for this new chief executive office for 4 years. I think it's four.
Yeah, it's four, 19, until 19, until yeah. 2019. Because quite simply, even if we come up with a new structure, it's going to take us a fair period of time to wrap everything together. You know how that goes. So
you in that agency will continue to have the longitudinal database, which is the combining all of the databases that we have in the other institutions to have ongoing research that can be done. It also continues to control to be the agency that overlooks the STEM hub and the STEM issues along with the RACs. So there are certain requirements that we've given to them, we retain those under this new office. The office itself will have rulemaking authority, as do a lot of agencies that have advisory boards, over those areas that they are commanding. It changes the chief executive officer, clearly stating that it is going to become a coordinating and collaboration wing, as opposed to the wing that just tells people to do. She will have the authority over the other agency heads to convene them around issues that have to do with the two of them, so or more. So if you have an issue about transition from senior high to community college or to university, she has the authority to pull those people together and have that conversation and be the person that helps move that conversation forward.
But I'd also point out, Arnie, that both Nancy Golden and all of these agencies that she has the convening authority over are part of the work group, and we're all going to be together on a pretty regular basis. So everybody's going to be full engaged in how we develop the structure moving forward. And quite honestly, I think everybody is on board with what we're doing at this point in time.
Another issue, if you look under summary of recommended changes, it really changes. That's on the first page. It focuses on the seamless transition from educational equity and elimination of barriers. So we've mm-hmm. kind of narrowed down what its real focus is to look at, and those are the things that this agency is really supposed to deal with. The next addition that we made is that one of the conversations that came up was that TSPC and all the education stands out here by itself, does not have, is responsible to itself only as a standalone agency. We've brought the education agencies under this deal. So in this bill, we move the teacher standards practices under the auspices of this chief executive officer. So there will be another a group that's looking, because much of what their agency does is coordinate education programs for the universities and community colleges, license and do things in the K-12 system. So its preview is basically the same group of people and agencies. So it gives it a home amongst the other people with someone that's her preview is to watch over that agency as well, and to work with it to eliminate barriers to cars, to create new opportunities. We eliminated the achievement compacts. I know that people have talked about achievement compacts. We had a big conversation about that. The bill that was going to, it was to sunset this year. The House had that bill. They didn't move it, so they were going to sunset anyway. This bill sends them a little bit earlier so that school districts and universities don't start working on them when, in fact, they are going to go away. And this bill clearly states that that's what's happening with those.
By the same token, it does not eliminate the goals the schools are going to be shooting for. It just eliminates this box they have to fill in to prove what they're doing.
And it it does reduce the reduction of the rulemaking authority of the office, which limits authority to laws and in the office is in charge with administrating. So there was always conflict about understanding whether they could impose laws on groups or rules on the other agencies. This one says clearly you have the rulemaking authority to do with STEM and the other kinds of agencies that you are responsible for, and it clarifies that. I think there's a lot of work we want to continue to do, and I think if you talk to any of the people that were on that group, they've enjoyed, I think, for the most part, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, they have participated very consistently. Every one of the people whose names you see on that list, either by phone or in meetings, were there. And in between meetings, they sent numerous emails asking for clarification or asking to consider XYZ in the next meeting. All of those were heard and listened to, and then we came to a consensus as a group around whether we should add it, whether it was something that was important, or whether we should put it on the list to do in the future. And I will say that Gretchen Embring, who is our administrator, did an exceptional job of coordinating and making all that material come together and be readable.
To be honest, Gretchen is the brains of the outfit.
Yeah, absolutely. So. And when we first started, one of the things I asked the OEIB and especially Nancy, could you put together a notebook of what it is you do? And you should. It is online. You can go see it. It's a lot of pages of information about what their duties and responsibilities were. Made a copy for every member of the group. We went through all of those kinds of things to find out what it was important and not. I want to also say that LFO and all of the other agencies came and were very helpful in making sure we didn't make a mistake about how money could be spent or not. And I think I was very impressed that by the third or fourth meeting, I think everybody started believing that we would be able to get a product. We had hoped that we would get that product out for the Education Committee. That didn't quite happen, and that's why it's here for you today. It is a lot longer than I think it needs to be, only because, as in many drafting things, you have to repeat the bill a couple different times to get everything right, and I've never quite understood why they do that, but I have been assured that that is what they have to do. And we even had a little issue at the very end because of the interconnection of these three bills. There's other stuff that drops out and comes in as they are implemented.
And there's some in 82, so.
And then there's also our other bill, 80, which is, I thought we would have done a long time ago, which takes out the, and you don't have it, it's in revenue, because the biggest problem with changing all the statutes to take out the agencies that no longer exist, the financial part of that has become a very big issue, making sure who is really responsible for the loans and grants that have been done that used to be housed with the other agency. Has made that a very difficult process, but I think we'll get there before the end of the session. I was almost getting to the point where I said, well, just take all of that and do another bill, and we'll finish the statutory stuff that had to do with the rules making abilities and all the other things they have, because that was going to be easy. That was the easier part. The hard part is figuring out how all of the financial responsibilities that existed in the chancellor's office and in individual universities, where does it go now, and how do we protect the state from giving it to somebody who, where we need to have some control over it.
Yeah, but I'm sure that Senators Haas and Boquist can get all that figured out pretty easily down there in revenue, so.
We'll find out. Anyway, with that, hopefully it wasn't too confusing. And if you look at the one pager, it kind of says those same things that we have to do. I just want to commend all of the people on that list on the back who came. The first day, all we did was ask, what do you want to do? And I would say that a good third were ready to just get away, do away with everything. Another third wanted to keep part or most of it. And the other group knew that there were certain things they didn't like, but they were willing to have the conversation. And I will tell you, when we had that conversation, the only reason we got out of that, I believe, was, again, I'm going to say my administrator, Ms. Embring, came up with a flow chart that had this amazing list of all the kinds of ways we could go and gave it out to everybody ahead of time and said, fill it out the way you'd like it to happen. And when we found out that about 85% all ended up in the same box at the end of the day, we asked the other people if they could go with us that last little bit, and all of them said that they could, as long as we had the conversation.
We're all in the upper right box at the end of the day.
It was amazing, actually. So.
Clearly, a lot of work has gone into this, and I could see that going on because I passed by the conference room with the door closed, and when I would go home at night, sometimes she would still be in there.
And I know there's a lot of other people who are here who were part of that group. None of them really want to speak, I don't think, but they're willing to at least acknowledge them. So if those of you who came to the meetings could stand up, that would be helpful. Just let people know who we have here. All of our agencies, they don't want to stand up.
Here they are.
So that's a nice group of them, and I really appreciate what they've done. I hope I haven't misspoken on any of the kinds of things that we've come to, but we all have notes. Everybody keeps them, so we'll make sure that we check that out as well.
I guess the closing thing I'd like to say, Madam Chair, is the entire group, we're feeling really positive that we can
move forward
and bring back a product for the next session that is going to put our education system in a more solid foundation than it is now.
And we'll bring this one pager to each of the caucuses next week. Together we'll come and put that presentation on and answer questions that people might have, because I think that's also important. I also want to say that Lindsay Capps from the governor's office was really helpful. There were a number of things that we always wanted to make sure that the governor was feeling good about what way we're moving, and Lindsay kept that coordination, that information with us exceptionally well.
So, and my understanding is that Senate Bill 215, the one you've primarily been talking about, will go to the floor, and the other two
will go
to
Ways
and
Means. Yeah. The other two are really funding bills. This one is doesn't have any of that in it. It's just the policy.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Boquist.
I'll take a stab at this because I'm looking forward to the one pager. Because I read these, and I couldn't see the interrelationship so well. I'm looking at page 2 of 2 on the work group pillar, so I understand there's 214, there's 215, there's 216, there's 217, and then there's SB 80, right?
Right.
Correct.
There is not 216.
Yes, there is. We've already sent it on.
That's right, we did. Okay.
That one was okay, and it had to do with quality teaching and learning.
Another one of
the agencies is underneath the OEIB.
So hopefully when we get the one pager in our caucus rooms, that'll explain the interrelationship between all of these and SB 80. So
most of it
in English, I could explain this.
There will be confliction.
This is the one pager, right?
There will be some conflicting information, conflict resolution taken care of why we kept them together. Because the agency's names are changing and other things are happening that are creating the problem. We're doing away in large part with the strategic investment kind of thing that we're doing currently in OIB, but we already had some. So we needed to make sure that we didn't, this came from LFO, we didn't take away the ability to spend the money that we put in the agency because we didn't have the language in there to do it. It was much more complex than I had anticipated.
Now, having said that, that's still a Ways and Means decision as to whether they spend the money there or put it into the core functions or however they do. But at least with the bills there, they do have those options.
Oliver?
I don't know what to ask. I'm going to wait for the invitation for Senator Cruz to come to my office and explain this.
We will do that.
I'll get a personal tutorial, especially on the part because he just committed me to something with some bill I've never heard of in revenue and finance, and I just love being committed by that.
80.
I mean,
Senator Beyer?
Nothing.
No. Okay, well, it looks like you've explained it well.
Well, not as well as I'd hope, but well.
And we'll have more chances to ask questions because we will be carrying these over, so.
They have questions, and if Senator Farioli would like us to talk to him, we can do that before the meeting.
Great.
And make sure that he gets the same information.
Yeah, I'm sure he would appreciate that.
Invite me so you can do it.
I would do that. That'd be good.
Okay, well, thank you both for all your work on this, and we will look forward to taking them up at our next hearing. So, okay, great. So I'm going to carry over our work sessions on Senate Bills 214, Senate Bill 214, and Senate Bill 217, and then close this work session. And what shall we do next? Okay. So next, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 886. And Aaron, this is new to this committee, so why don't you tell us about this one, and we'll have some people come forward and talk about it.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 886, the underlying bill transfers authority over health care facility structure plan review and inspection for fire and life and safety from state fire marshal to Department of Consumer Business and Services or to municipalities having building inspection programs. I will direct your attention to the -3 amendment, however, which replaces the original measure. It requires state fire marshal, deputy or assistant of state fire marshal, or person acting for governmental subdivision who inspects structure and issues citation or order for nonconformity with federal, state, or local fire safety standard to include on citation or order exact reference to law, regulation, rule, or other source of authority that establishes the fire safety standard and plain statement of facts upon which citation or order is based. We have a no revenue impact and a no fiscal impact came in shortly, just a few minutes ago. So that is what's before you, Madam Chair. I believe you have two individuals, Mr. Doug Riggs and Mr. Ryan Tribbett, or...
Who would come and forward then and do talk we have about this? Is there somebody from the fire marshal, too?
Yeah.
Okay, why don't the three of you all come forward then and tell us about this? Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you for giving us a chance to speak about this bill. My name is Ryan Tribbett, here today representing the National Electrical Contractors Association. Not actually going to testify to the highly complicated, well-intentioned, but poorly written underlying bill, but to the -3 amendments that you're looking at. Simply put, when a local or state fire marshal comes in and inspects a facility, if they, for instance, like that strobe light above your head, they want it moved somewhere else to comply with a code that they're interpreting, we would like them to cite where their statutory authority lies, what code it is they're interpreting as a part of that change that may delay a project from being built and may add a financial component to it. We just think it makes sense. It's what the Building Codes Division follows, the procedure they follow, and we think it works very well.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Nicole Palmateer here today on behalf of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, and also today speaking on behalf of the Oregon Fire Marshals Association. We represent the local fire marshals who work with the state fire marshal's office. We're here to support the -3 amendments. We did participate in a work group meeting and have continued to work with the office of the state fire marshal as we've worked through these amendment processes. We do support this, and we look forward to participation in the ongoing work group conversation in the interim around fire marshals, healthcare facilities, and other kinds of issues of that nature. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Great. I am Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Doug Riggs on behalf of the Oregon Ambulatory Surgery Center Association. I really appreciate the work that Senator Byers put into this over the last few months and the others of you who we've talked to. This has been an issue that's been ongoing for several years, and we really appreciate some progress being made on this issue. I think this amendment is a really good first step, and we're looking forward to the discussion that I think the governor's office is going to convene during the interim and hopefully come back with a bill for next session. I did want to just take a couple minutes and show you really what the root of this issue is. My members throughout the state of Oregon frequently get visited by their state or local fire marshal official, and the explanation of why we're being cited for violations of some unknown code come sometimes and other times don't come at all. So I wanted to give you a couple pictures and show you a couple of the things that we've problems that we've had. This is a generator like most backup generators, and we were told that we needed to test the generator on a Monday, not on a Sunday, which of course interfered with the work that we were doing during the work week. Took the generator offline in case something happened during the work week. We'd had a process of having someone come in Sunday afternoons, and apparently that was not sufficient, and they would not cite what particular statute was necessary. This is a really interesting one. This is a door. Actually, you see a couple doors. You see a door that's in the back of the photo by the gentleman in the blue. Initially, we installed the door in the very back, and later, a couple years down the road, someone else came in and said, no, it has to be moved to the front. So we moved it to the front. It cost several thousand dollars. And a couple years later, someone came back and said, no, it needs to be in the back. And so we had to move it back to the back of the room. And I think this is actually in Senator Byers' district. This is a very interesting situation. We have a facility that has a public sidewalk, you know, as you can see, ways away from our front door. But we were told that we had to have a full-time security guard standing at the entrance to the building and making sure that no one was smoking on the sidewalk, even though no one had been observed smoking on the sidewalk as long as we could remember. The cost of having a full-time security guard enforcing smoking on a public right-of-way was dubious at best, but we were told that we had to have a full-time security guard. This is in one of our buildings. We're in the very bottom of the building. We had to redo the wiring for the floodlights. Outside of the building, the wiring had been on the inside of the building, and so we had to move the wiring from the outside to the inside. The second picture is phone lines that were disconnected from a prior use. We had to remove all the phone lines from that area, and then the last one is paint. This is my favorite one, and it comes fairly recently. We had fire alarms like the ones that you have right behind you. They were in all the places where we were told by the initial building inspector they had to be, where we believe they complied with state and local regulations, including in the bathroom. So if someone was in the bathroom during a fire emergency, they would know that there was a fire occurring and know that they had to get out of the bathroom. We were instructed by the inspector that we had to take the flashers and the horns out of the fire alarms, and we had to do that prior to opening business the next Monday, or we couldn't open. We were not told where in statute or regulation this requirement came from, but our attorneys on Monday afternoon came back to us and said that we had then violated both state and federal code for not having our fire alarms in the right places. So these are a few of the issues that we've had. We have made many attempts to have discussions to no avail, and so we really appreciate the committee taking the time today. We think this right inside it provision is going to be very helpful, and we're very optimistic that the governor's office will be able to convene a group of us and work this out for a long-term solution. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Well, thank you all for working so hard to get this resolved. Are there any questions? Okay. I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again. And we are in a work session. I think that was the testimony we planned on.
Madam Chair, I move the A3 amendment dated 5/20/15 into the primary bill.
Okay. Senator Boquist has moved to adopt the -3 amendment to Senate Bill 886. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? Okay, amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move SB 886 as adopted with a -3 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
And Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 866 to the floor with a do pass as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, motion carries. Bill moves to the floor.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to carry the bill.
Oh. Great. Thank you, Senator Beyer. I was
going to say a word. Spent a lot of time on this bill.
I knew he was going to volunteer. That's why I didn't do it.
Okay. Well, good for you. Then we will have Senator Beyer as her carrier, and I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 886. And what shall we do?
We've got a 942 now.
Okay. Next, let's open a work session on Senate Bill 942. And members, you should remember this bill. It deals with the statues in the U.S. Capitol, but Erin, why don't you just refresh our memory on this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 942 directs Oregon State Capitol Foundation to undertake fundraising and commission of statues of Chief Joseph and Abigail Scott Duniway to be placed in the National Statuary Hall in the United States Capitol. We heard this measure on April 9th, at which time some concerns were raised about the appropriate location and the cost. So what you have before you now is a -1 amendment. The -1 amendment replaces the original measure. It directs the Oregon Department of Administrative Services to enter into agreement with Oregon Historical Society to solicit donations for selection of sculptors, design, production, transportation to the Capitol building, and the cost of unveiling of statues of Chief Joseph and Abigail Scott Duniway, and for the removal of existing and return to Oregon of the statues that are there. It directs the Executive Director of Oregon Historical Society to facilitate administrative process of building new and replacing statues. As soon as practical, after the Oregon Historical Society determines that has attained sufficient funding, the society is then to seek proposals from qualified sculptors and direct the executive director to complete the project. The measure appropriates money out of the general fund to the Department of Administrative Services for the next biennium beginning July 1, 2015. The amount has yet to be determined. That money is to be transferred to the Oregon Historical Society for the purposes of funding this agreement. With the -1 amendment, Madam Chair, you have a no revenue impact. A fiscal impact is issued and does need to go to Ways and Means should you adopt the -1 amendment.
Okay, so members, this, as you recall, basically resolves who these replacement statues would be of, and then we'll leave it to Ways and Means to come up with funding sufficient for the Historical Society to start the fundraising effort. So that's where we are with this -1 that will enable us to do that.
Is that Historical Society? I guess they're not coming. They agree now.
I think this is.
They've been told. I was going to say, Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, I won't put words in Mr. Tomchuk's mouth, but I will say we've had conversations and that this is an agreeable arrangement with them.
Madam Chair, I move the -1 amendment dated 5/14/15 into 942.
Senator Boquist moves the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 942. Is there any objection to the amendment? Okay, amendment is adopted. Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I move SB 942 as amended by the -1 amendment to the floor with a due pass with a subsequent oral to joint Ways and Means.
Senator Boquist, and this doesn't currently have a subsequent referral.
We are asking for the Senate President's office to add a referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. So Senator Boquist has moved Senate Bill 942 as amended by the -1s. To the floor with a due pass recommendation and that a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee be added. And that is our motion. Any discussion? Nope. Any objection? Nope. Motion carries. And this moves on its way to Ways and Means. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 942. And then the only thing left is our public hearing. So we'll move to that. And I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 465A. Erin, could you tell us about this?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 465A replaces county with community mental health program and community mental health program director throughout statute's governing process to initiate commitment of persons with mental illness to align responsibility for payment of associated costs. It accounts for possibility of public-private entity under contract with Oregon Health Authority to provide mental health programs. There is an emergency clause on this measure. There is a no fiscal impact, a no revenue impact on it. It does come to you today without recommendation from your Human Services and Early Childhood Education Committee unanimously.
Okay, well, thank you, Erin. We have a sign-up sheet and two people are signed up, so I'll just call them both up together if that's okay, and that's Susan Morgan and Cheryl Ramirez. Great to see you. Actually, one of our former colleagues, she was Representative Morgan at one time, and I think we were actually in the same freshman class, if I'm not mistaken.
For the record, Madam Chair, I'm Susan Morgan, and I'm serving as a Douglas County Commissioner. And thank you for the opportunity to come and testify on the bill today. The bill comes to you from Senator Gelser's committee because of a mix-up in the amendments that I'm responsible for. So I have apologized to her for that, and here we are. What is going on in Douglas County is a couple of things happened. One of them was the CCO legislation that passed out of this body sessions ago, which transferred the Medicaid funding to the CCOs. So prior to that, the Mental Health Authority had been with the county. The county received the mental health Medicaid funds and provided services. So with the CCO change, the funding went from the county to the CCO, and subsequently the county gave back the mental health authority to the state and no longer provides any mental health authority or has any funding for mental health programs. So we requested a change to the statute to add a piece in for counties like us that did not provide services and did not receive funding, that in those counties, the responsibility would be with the community mental health program or the community mental health program provider rather than with the county. So this we see as simply being a housekeeping bill that cleans up the county's responsibility for something for which we do not provide and don't have any control over.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. And
good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. I am Cheryl Ramirez, Director of the Association of Oregon Community Mental Health Programs, and I'm here on behalf of the community mental health programs across Oregon in support of Senate Bill 465 as amended. We offered two changes to the original bill. One was to both accommodate Douglas and Klamath counties. Klamath went through a similar process that Douglas did in terms of relinquishing their local mental health authority, while at the same time ensuring that other county CMHP, community mental health program, contractual relationships stay intact. We have 20 other counties that have rolled out their community mental health program into a not-for-profit agency, but they still retain the local mental health authority responsibilities. We also have 14 community mental health programs that are actually within county departments and one community mental health program that is in the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. So we wanted to make sure that all scenarios would be possible by tweaking that language, and that's mainly what that amendment does, is it makes it possible for any of those scenarios. And then secondly, the revision to Section 4 makes the responsibilities of the Community Mental Health Program in Chapter 426 consistent with Chapter 430. So in other words, the duties for emergency psychiatric care, custody, and treatment are subject to the availability of funds provided by the state. And that's how it's worded in Chapter 430. So that's
and
those
just
were the
to be clear,
amendments.
Those changes that you were referring to are actually reflected
in
the
amendment.
Ingress bill, right?
We worked with Commissioner Morgan, Legislative Council, and the sponsors to craft the amendment together.
So then, Commissioner, this bill would be fine to go forward as it is.
We support
need
this
any
bill
further
fully.
Changes. Okay. Well, are there any questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Major. Commissioner, I want to make sure because I'm. Every time I come back to this committee, I get asked by my caucus, so I want to make sure I understand what you just said. It came out of the previous committee without recommendation because there was a confusion on who agreed and didn't agree to the amendments. Am I right here?
There was the confusion was over how many versions of amendments there were. And there were only one version of amendments. There was only the -1 amendments that were amended into the bill. And so there was some confusion over whether there was -1s and -2s, but there were no -2s. There were only -1s. So when we got that cleared up, it was the time for the committee to close down.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Right, and that was confirmed to me by the chair of the committee as well. So.
I'm fine. I just have to be able to explain it to 12 loose cats in the same room.
Or 11?
No, I have to explain it to myself to make sure I have
it
right first because they'll question whether I'm right or not.
I see. Okay. Senator Beyer, are you good?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. Well, I think we understand what this does, so it sounds like it should be pretty straightforward. We just posted it today for a public hearing because we wanted to hear what the need and the issue was, and so I think that's clear, so we'll be able to take it up.
Thank you very much for giving us the opportunity for the hearing. Very appreciated.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
And so thanks, Commissioner Morgan, and thanks, Cheryl. And that completes our sign-up sheet. So I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 465. We'll post this for a hearing coming up soon.
Madam Chair, we will be able to post this next week for Thursday at the earliest.
Okay. And then we'll carry over, we already did, over 214, 215, and 217 to our next hearing.
As well as 832. Yes, ma'am.
And 832.
Yeah.
Okay. So thank you. And members, so that completes our work for today, completes our work for this week, which means we won't come together again until next Tuesday, and we'll have plenty to do then. So thank you very much. Have a great weekend, and we are adjourned.